back with us next Wednesday at 3:30 to review new jazz releases. It's 3 minutes after 4 o'clock, and this is Fresh Air. You're tuned to WUHY FM in Philadelphia. My very special guest on Fresh Air is Sammy Kahn, who I bet has written the lyrics to some of your favorite songs. So let's try out this hypothesis as I list some of the songs that he's written the lyrics for. Here we go. Until the Real Thing Comes Along, by Mia Bistichain. I fall in love too easily. I should care. It's been a long, long time. Let it snow, day by day. Time after time, it's magic. Teach me tonight. Love and marriage. Come fly with me. The second time around, call me irresponsible. My kind of town, thoroughly modern Millie. Well, that's just a handful of Sammy Kahn's songs from the 1930s onwards. Some of his collaborators have included composers Saul Chaplin, Julie Stein, and Jimmy Van Heusen. He's written songs for the stage and for the movies and for the hell of it. He's won lots of awards and is now serving as president of the National Academy of Popular Music and president of the Songwriters Hall of Fame. His autobiography is called I Should Care. Sammy Kahn will be treating Philadelphia audiences to his songs next Sunday, not this Sunday, but a week from this Sunday, in a musical review called Words and Music. This performance at the Academy of Music will be held Sunday, May 18th, at the Academy at 8. And the performance is a benefit for the Solomon Schechter Day School. And for more information, you can call 649-6310. Again, that's 649-6310. Well, currently, Sammy Kahn is working on Bojangles, which is the musical about Bill Bojangles Robinson. The music is being written by Charles Strauss, who also did Bye Bye Birdie and Annie. Sammy Kahn's also working on a revival of Jean-Henri's Time Remembered, and this has music by Mitch Lee, who you may know as the composer of the score Man of La Mancha. Sammy Kahn, it is really a treat to have you here. Welcome to Fresh Air.
I'm very pleased to be sitting here, and Fresh Air is obviously a misnomer, right? We're sitting down here in a dungeon.
That's right.
with air being pumped in from the Philadelphia streets. But it's very, very pleasant to sit opposite someone who's so young and so filled with the love of words and music. I really mean that. I'm very pleased to be sitting here.
Well, thanks. I'm very pleased to have you here. Let me start simple here. I think it's maybe it's not simple. What makes a good lyric?
I'll tell you what makes a good lyric. The art of putting words to music is a very special business, and I could give you many examples of the art, but the one that comes swiftly to mind is this one by Mr. Irving Berlin, when he said, "And if I ever lost you, how much would I cry?" Now, you can't sing the word cry to that note without wanting to cry. It's the matching of words and music. I am not the greatest lyric writer in the world, but I promise you I am the most facile and prolific lyric writer in the world. For instance, I will sit down, I'm just giving you my modus operandi for writing lyrics. A composer will come in, and he will sit at the piano. And I've asked this composer to write me some music for Sesame Street. Sesame Street has now become an avocation of mine. Whenever I have nothing much to do, I'll call somebody and say, "Hey, you want to write some songs for Sesame Street?" So a composer will come in. This happens to be a fellow by the name of Donald Kahn, son of Gus Kahn. I'm often mistaken for Gus Kahn, and I find that a very flattering mistake, because Gus Kahn was the dean of American lyric writers, and this is his son, Donald. And Donald wrote a couple of good songs, and so you know that song, "This is the start of a this is the end of a beautiful friendship, and just the beginning of love." This is Donald Kahn and Stanley Stein.
You know? Julie Stein's son?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
these
great.
Two sons. This is a kind of a cult song. "This is the end of a beautiful friendship." So Donald Kahn comes and he sits at the piano and he goes like this. Bump, bump, ba-da, 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 bump. Now, those would just be notes to you. But I'm listening with a lyric writer's ear and I'm hearing a notion for a Sesame Street song. I say, "Play that again." He goes, "Bop, bop, bada, bop, bop." And I say, "I love when it rains." And he says, "How do you mean that?" I say, "P Pit-pit-a-pat, pit-pit-a-pat, I love when it rains. It's thrilling when it's spilling and just filling the drains. You follow?
Yeah.
Now he'll play me another melody. Goes, dee-da, dee-da, da-da-da-da-da. You hear notes, I hear words. Dreamland, dreamland, who knows your address? Only dreamers, I guess. Apart from the fact that these words sing to these notes, that is what makes a lyric. See, Mr. Shakespeare would have been a very bad lyricist, because he wrote a lyric called Love Laughs at Locksmiths. No, you can't sing Love Laughs at Locksmiths. You can't.
Do you think that Tin Pan Alley composers have been justly criticized for moon, June, spoon rhymes?
Oh, yes. No, but not justly. Not justly, I would say accurately, but not justly. It's accurate, but I don't know if it's justice. You see, I came around in the days of moon, June, spoon. I did. But my heroes were always... See, Mack Gordon was a great hero of mine. You know who Mack Gordon is? He wrote with Al Dubin all those great, great, great songs. You'll Never Know, Chattanooga Choo Choo, Serenade in Blue, all the great Glenn Miller hits. Mack Gordon was an incredible lyric writer. But he wrote a lyric that I loved. I've got lots of plans for a place that you'll need pots and pans for. I like that. And one of the first signals to me that I was more than just a moon and June lyric writer was I wrote a song for the old Cotton Club show in which Louis Armstrong starred, for which I wrote the song Shoeshine Boy. And this lyric said, you're a lucky guy when you consider the highest bidder can't buy the gleam in your eye. You're a lucky guy. Now, if you pick up a Sammy Kahn lyric, you will be affected by the singability of it. I only write, I never stop writing, Terry. I write constantly. A day doesn't go by. And when people say, which comes first, the words or the music? I say what seems a facetious answer. I say, the phone call. And that's what comes first. The phone rings and someone will say, hey, Sammy, would you write me? I got a call from a man named Jack Gold with the Columbia Record Company in California. He is now the producer of the Johnny Mathis hits, and so he's on a high. He said, Sammy, could you come and see me? So I came out to his office, and he said, look, there's a man, his name is Julio Iglesias. Julio Iglesias is the number one South American singer. He's big all over the world except in America. He has a song here. Would you listen to it? Because we think maybe this song, properly recorded, will break through as an American hit for him. So he puts on this record by this man, Julio Iglesias. And I hear a theme which goes, dee 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 da dee da 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 dee da ba da ba ba dee ba dee ba da. Now you're hearing notes, right? I'm hearing something very passionate. I hear this nice fellow singing. So I say, well, I would call that If It Takes Me All My Life. He says, see, that sounds good. I said, what do you mean it sounds good? I am translating notes. Do you follow? If it takes me all my life, all the days I have to live, you alone will own my heart and the love it has to give, till the earth is dust and mist.
It's nice.
Right?
That's nice.
You follow?
Yeah.
You see, but I am, that's the magic, that's the gift, and I'm very, very humble about it.
Is it true that the first published lyric you wrote was Like Niagara Falls, I'm Falling for You?
No, it's not true. It's fun. That was one of my early attempts at creativity. In the early days, I wrote about 50 or 60 songs a week just to discover if I could rhyme.
Can you sing us one of those early
terrible
attempts?
Songs? Oh, God, I'm very happy to tell you. I cannot recall a single one. Like Niagara Falls, I'm Falling for You is about as close as I come. But I tell you, I have, I would say, a pyramid high stack of all my lyrics, which someday some unfortunate scholar may go through and find some of these early attempts. But I promise you one thing, Terry. I come upon a lot of these old, old lyrics. In every one of them, no matter how poor and how trite, somewhere in them there is a line that sparkles and says, and I always take heart from that line.
I want to ask you about the song "I Should Care."
Now, that's my favorite song.
Oh, I love that song. I have a friend who had a swing band, and that was one of the songs they always did.
Would you like to hear the story of "I Should Care"?
Yes.
All right.
But I just want to tell you the story that he always told when he would introduce the song. He said, "This is a song I really love. It's called 'I Should Care,' and it must have been written by a Jewish lyricist because listen to it. I should care. I should go without sleeping. I should care. It has such perfect Jewish intonation in it."
No. You know. No, that's. I'll take exception to your friend. But you know, it's the old famous telegram. It all depends on how you read it. The most Jewish line I ever wrote in my life is in the song "Time After Time." Tell your friend he should do this bit to that song. He says, "I only know what I know. I only know what I know. I forgot my own lyric. Time after time I tell myself that I'm so lucky to be loving you, so lucky to be the one you run to see in the evening when the day is through. I only know what I know. Come on, you ba ba da ba da. You made my life so young.
So new.
That is a Yiddish line. Now, and also tell your friend that the greatest Yiddish composer in the whole world is Cole Porter. Do you know that?
Yeah. Well, he.
Die 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 die. Da 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 da. What more Jewish melodies than anybody?
I think he was even quoted as saying that the way to make a surefire hit is to make it sound Yiddish.
That's right. Now, well, let me tell you, I should care, and I'm going to tell you why. I had been in a slump in Hollywood. I'd written some songs, went out to Hollywood, and went right into a dive. A real, real period of fallow period. I was living at the Castle Argyle with Axel Stordahl and Paul Weston, the two arrangers for Tommy Dorsey. And I just broke out of the slump with a song called "I've Heard That Song Before." And again, when you hear dee-da, da-da-da-da, dee-dee-dee-da, da-da-da-da, I said to Julie Stein when he played me, "I've heard that song before." He said, "What are you, a tune detective?" I said, "Hey, Julie, I don't mean I've heard the song. I mean that as a title." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, it seems to me I've heard that song before." And now, if you listen to that lyric is a lesson in a Sammy Kahn lyric. Because if you accept, "It seems to me I've heard that song before. It's from an old familiar score. I know it well, that melody. It's funny how a theme recalls a favorite dream. A dream that brought you so close to me. I know each word because I've heard that song before." Now, what I tell people is I'm not writing that lyric as much as that lyric is writing me. The lyric said, "Forevermore, forevermore's a memory." And the music went, boom, boom, deep, 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 deep. I said, "Please have them play it again. Boom, boom. And I'll remember just when I've heard that lovelies." Now, that's putting words to music. That is lyricizing. Now, this song breaks for one of the big hits. I come into the apartment at the Castle Argyle where Axel Stordahl and Paul Weston are making an arrangement of "I've Heard That Song Before" for Tommy Dorsey. And like all arrangers, they are grumbling and grousing. They said, "There he is. Look at him. Takes him 15 minutes to write a song. Takes us hours to make it sound good." I said, why don't you fellas write a song? They said, we've written a song. I said, let me hear it. They said, let us finish the arrangement. What kind of an introduction you want? And I said, who cares about an introduction? Who walks down the street humming an introduction? I said, you can give me one note for all I care. And the Tommy Dorsey arrangement I've heard that song before, had a one-note introduction. It went like this. Dee-da, da-da, da-da, one note. So now they've finished the arrangement. Terry, I promise you, what I'm about to tell you seems like an anecdote. It is, but it's totally and absolutely true. My two good friends, Axel Stordahl and Paul Weston, these two great arrangers, go to the piano, and they start to play. Dee-da-da, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, dee-da-da. And I said to myself immediately, again, the gift, again, the humble blessing. I said to myself, I would call this song I Should Care. But I wait till they finish, and I say, what do you call this song? They said, we don't call it anything. I said, you don't have words? She said, no. I said, start at the top. Now, I should care. I should go around weeping. And I looked at them and I said, hey, that sounds good. Now, if that sounds good, the song is written. Follow me carefully. I should care. I should go around weeping. I should care. I should go without what? Peeping, creeping, leaping's got to be. I should go without sleeping. Strangely enough, I sleep well, except for a dream or two. But then I count my sheep well. Funny how sheep can lull you to sleep. So I should care. I should let it upset me, but I swear that it just doesn't get me. Maybe I won't find someone as lovely as you, but I should care, and I do. Now, actually, if you start at the top, the ending is always there, and that took about a half hour. Now, Paul Weston, a very religious man, says to me, there's one line, Sammy. I said, what is that? He says, do you have to say swear? But I swear that it just doesn't get me. I said, I don't have to say swear. Does that bother you? He says, yes, it bothers me. So I took it out. I should care. I should let it. I should care, but it just doesn't get me. Now, that song, for some reason, written by two musicians, is a musician's favorite. Terry, I have been in remote places. In Turkey, I've walked into the sleaziest dive you can imagine. There was a two-piece orchestra, right? Saxophone and drums. Would you like this combination? Saxophone and drums? That's the combination, the orchestra. What are they playing? Ah, da, da. Wherever I go in the world, I hear I Should Care.
It's a great song.
It has a magnetism for musicians. They love it.
I want to ask you about a song that is Yiddish, and that's Bamir Bistashen.
Yeah, sure.
How did you get to write that song?
Well, this story would take again about 2 hours. I'll go very swiftly. Lou Levy, Saul Chaplin, and I went up to the Apollo Theater in Harlem. On the stage at the Apollo Theater were two black boys, Johnny and George, singing by Mir Bister Shane in the original Yiddish. By Mir Bister Shane, by Mir Hustu Chain Cham, by Mir Bister Einer Efter Welt, to me you are one of the world. By Mir Bister Git, by Mir Hustu It. Now can you imagine a Yiddish lyric by Mir Hustu It, the word It, Clara Bow, the It girl, by Mir Bister Tyra von Gelt. Now, in the Apollo Theater up in Harlem, to hear this song going bum bum da ba da, and the theater is literally moving on its foundation. It's undulating. You never saw a feeling like this. And I turned to Saul Chaplin. I said, can you imagine? They don't even know what they're singing. Look what this song is doing. The very next day, I meet Tommy Dorsey. He says he's going into the Paramount Theater. He says, you have a song I can take in there. I said, Tommy, I heard a song up in Harlem. Would be a sensation in the Paramount Theater. He said, what's that? I said, by me, her, or Bistu Shane. I sing Yiddish. He said, what are you singing? He said, what are you, crazy? I said, Tommy, listen, I'm telling you, there are very few Jews up in Harlem. That's before Sammy Davis. I said, there are very few Jews up in Harlem. You'll find a lot of Jews in the Paramount. Please do this song. He wouldn't hear of it. I bought a copy of the song and went back to see him again. He threw me out of the Paramount Theater with the copy. So there I am, the copy's on my piano in my apartment on 57th Street in New York City. In walk three young girls called the Andrews Sisters. And they see this copy and they say, what's that? I said, it's a Yiddish song. And I go, buy me. They start to sing right away. Can we record it? I said, be my guest. They recorded the song in Yiddish. And the record company, Decca, said, hey, we don't put out Jewish records. What are you, crazy? Get an English lyric. Now it comes back to me again. And I was really, really outraged. I say, what do you want me to do? Do a translation? What are you, crazy? If you want a translation, go to Berlitz. But they kept after me, and I sat down one evening. I'll never forget. I didn't even sit down. I took a pencil, and under every word, I said, by mir bist du schön, please let me explain. Because that's the key, isn't it? By mir bist du schön means that you're grand. By mir bist du schön, again I'll explain, it means you're the fairest in the land. I only knew two. I'm going back to 1937. That's twice your age. And I wrote, there was a song called The Umbrella Man. Tutsa bella bella, tutsa bella bella, the umbrella man. So I knew bella bella. So I could say bella bella. There was another German song called Wunderbar. So I said, I could say bella bella, even say Wunderbar. Each language only helps me tell you how grand you are. I've tried to explain by mir bist du schön, so kiss me and say you understand. What else you want to know?
What a great story. Well, Sammy Cohen, I thought we'd just break a second. I just want to play a few bars of Jimmy Rushing's recording.
I'm going to have to stop talking?
Oh, listen, we'll just play a few bars of this probably please, so please. That we can get right back. I just wanted you to hear a couple of bars of this.
I love
this is Jimmy
it,
Rushing.
I love Jimmy Rushing.
Oh, great. Okay, and for anyone who's not acquainted with him, he was a blues singer who spent a number of years with the Count Basie Band. And this is a recording from his last album that he made, and this is By Mir Bist Du Schön with lyrics by my guest Sammy Cohen.
Of all the girls I've known, I have known some. Until I first met you, I was lonesome. And when you came in sight, dear, my heart grew light, and the world seemed new to me. You really swell, I have to admit you. Deserve expression that really fit you. And I've racked my brains hoping to explain the things you do to me. By mir bist du schön, please let me explain. By mir bist du schön means that you're grand. By mir bist du schön, again I'll explain. It means you're the fairest in the land. I could say bella, bella, even say wunderbar. These languages help me to tell you how grand you are. I've tried to explain. By mir bist du schön, so kiss me and say you understand.
You don't know how remarkable it sounds to me. And that's a great, great, great reward, you know. Any listener who hopes to be a songwriter, I will tell you, there is no career quite as rewarding as, quote, underline, exclamation point, successful songwriting, because the rewards keep coming from all directions. Walk into a cab, someone is, what the record is playing, you go into a fine restaurant, the orchestra is playing, you walk down the street, someone is walking in front of you singing the song. By Mir Bist Du Schön has been a hit for me about 5 or 6 times. Recently, you know that big commercial, Root Beer, Mr. Schön. Root Beer, Mr. Schön.
Well, how do you feel when you walk into the elevator and it's on the music?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. It's a great reward. Right now, the Exxon people are using type it once and type it twice and type it once again. It takes a long, long time.
They have to get your permission.
Oh,
to
yes,
say that?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Let me just reintroduce you.
Please.
For our guests who are just tuning in. My very special guest is Sammy Cohen, who's written, what,
everything.
Thousands and thousands
everything.
And thousands of lyrics. I'm sure some of your favorite tunes he wrote the lyrics for. Now, you've been doing a lot of singing for us. And Julie Stein wrote in his autobiography that when you worked on your first musical movie together, which was Glad to See You, that the person who was in the lead couldn't do it. Was this a show or a
movie?
No,
show.
It was a show
right here in Philadelphia.
It was in Philadelphia.
Right here in Philadelphia, the Shubert Theater.
And he said that
after the first week, there was an accident, and I went on in the role.
Right, and in his autobiography, it says that while you were on stage, he was in his hotel room weeping occasionally.
Yes, more than occasionally.
But you like to sing.
My whole life is an anecdote. I really believe that I'm enchanted. My whole life is an anecdote. Wherever I go, I trigger anecdotes. I got into a taxi cab, and a cab driver said, "Don't I know you?" I said, "Of course you do. I'm Sammy Kahn." He said, "I don't know you." Don't you love it?
You did a lot of work for different movie studios.
I worked for them all. At one time for each of them.
What kind of demands were made on you? Like when you were working for Columbia, for instance, and there was a movie you'd have to do, would they say, "Okay, we need 13 songs by Monday"?
No, it wasn't quite as that. That used to be the demands when I worked at the Vitaphone Studios in Brooklyn in 1932. That's a long time ago. They didn't want the songs good. They wanted them by Wednesday. That's true. But that was a marvelous, marvelous proving ground. You know, every performer in the world went through the Vitaphone Studios in Brooklyn. You can't name a performer that I didn't meet. And that's where I wrote the first Hit Parade hit that ever came out of a Vitaphone short. Was called "This Is My First Affair, So Please Be Kind." That was written for a Vitaphone short. The studios give you a script, and you read the script, and we brought Doris Day. We took her by the hand, and we brought her to Warner Brothers. And she tested for the film, which was called Romance on the High Seas, and wrote her the song "It's Magic." And it wasn't my favorite song in the film. There's another song in that film called "It's You or No One for Me. I'm Sure of This. Each Time We Kiss." Marvin Gaye, a lot of great, great singers have made "It's You or No One." That was my favorite. But "It's Magic" turned out to be the song that made Doris Day.
When you worked for Columbia, the head of the studio, I think, was Harry Cohn.
What do you mean? Was he ever the head of the studio?
Well, what kind of relationship did you have with him? I know you played cards together a lot.
It was almost like, you know, he was like a father. It was like a father-son relationship, you know. As a young boy in the lower part of the Lower East Side of New York City, there was a little theater there on Grand Street called the Windsor. And I went to that theater, and I looked at that screen. I used to see the Columbia Picture Album emblem, and I used to say, one day I'm going to get to Hollywood, and one day I'm going to meet the head of a studio, and one day the head of a studio is going to like me. And I'll never forget vividly, I was living in the Sunset Towers, Frank Sinatra upstairs, Axel Stordahl on the other side, and one morning, a Saturday morning, the phone rang, and it was Harry Cohn of Columbia Pictures saying, "You want to play some gin?" And just like, you know, in the famous, famous scene, "What Makes Sammy Run," I looked up and I said, thank you. And that began the relationship of Harry Cohn and me. But any relationship with Harry Cohn was doomed to failure.
Was it?
Oh, yeah, because he was that kind of a man. It was difficult for him to accept love.
So did you have a lot of fights while you were working for the studio?
No. We just had one fight and I was thrown out. He offered us a deal, which I thought was a little chintzy. And I said, the deal he offered was $15,000 a picture for five pictures, $75,000. And I said, we'll do two for 15, that's 30. Two for 40, that's 70. The fifth one we'll do for 25, that's 95 against 75. So let's say he could have said, well, I'll give you 85. He says, get them off the lot. So he got us off the lot, and the first picture we did away from Columbia was for Samuel Goldwyn, a Danny Kaye picture, and we got $25,000 for that picture.
When you're writing a song, like for a movie or for a show or something, do you demonstrate it to the singer who's going to be doing it?
That's the only reason I write.
So you can sing it
for them. That's the only reason. Terry, I must tell you, I'm considered a most, most lethal demonstrator. I will tell you one of my favorite stories. The first time I ever sang to Bing Crosby, I stood in front of him, and I really, what I call, leaned in. Jimmy Van Heusen was at the piano. I sang to Bing Crosby. You imagine, I'm singing to Bing Crosby. And I sang him this song. When I finished, he looked up, he said, "You're very good." I said, "Very good, I'm the best." And he said to me, "What about Mac Gordon?" aforementioned Mac on, I said, Mac Gordon is disqualified because he actually sings. And he did. So, considering that I don't have a voice, and I stand in front of you and sing a song, when I finish and you like it, I say, if you like it, wait till you hear it sung, you know? But very often when it is sung, it isn't as good as I did it. And one of the great, great relationships I had with Sinatra, I would stand in front of him and sing. And it was never, ever a question of, I don't like it, or, gee, what is that? Just listen. Nod, and that was it. I only had two debates with Sinatra. He was recalling the Tender Trap. And the Tender Trap at the end of the song, and all at once it seemed so nice. The folks are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. You wonder how it all came about. But it's too late, there's no getting out. You fell in love, and love is the tender trap. And Sinatra went, you fell in love, and love is the tender trap. I said, hey, hey, hey. He says, hey, what? I said, you can't sing. Love is the... I said, you got to go. And love... He said, that's an F. I said, yeah, that's an F, and you're Frank Sinatra. So he just looked at me with that famous Ray. He said to Nelson, let's do one more. And you listen to where he hits that F in the end of the Tender Trap. The other time I had a quarrel with him, he was singing one of my favorite songs with Van Heusen, The Last Dance. It's at the closing band on Come Dance With Me. It's the last dance, we've come to the last dance. They're dimming the lights down, they're hoping they'll go. They're wondering just when will we leave. But till we leave. And he said, they're wondering just when we will leave. I said, it isn't they're wondering just when we will leave. They're wondering just when will we leave. He says, who talks like that? You say they're wondering when we will leave. I said, that's how people talk, Frank. You're not talking, you're singing. Oh, would you do me a favor? They're wondering just when will we leave. But till we leave. So he recorded, and then he said to me, I still think it's cockamamie.
You're still good friends.
Oh, yes.
Tell us a story about how you wrote Saturday Night is the Loneliest Night of the Week, which you recorded.
I will tell you, this is a marvelous, marvelous story. One of my favorite stories. It's the Gotham Hotel, New York City, 55th and 5th, a Saturday night. I'm home alone in our apartment. Julie Stein has gone out. About 7 o'clock, my sister and my brother-in-law, Florence and Jules Goldberg, come into the hotel on their way to a party, and they say, and I'm in robes and a pajama, say, you're not feeling well. I said, oh, I feel marvelous. They said, well, aren't you going out? It's Saturday night. I said, look, Saturday night belongs to the civilians. Civilians go out Saturday night. I can go out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday. Saturday night, if you're in show business, you stay home. I said, I'll tell you something funny. If you're in show business, Saturday night's the loneliest night in the week. And they leave. I'm not making this up. I walk over the piano, I go, and I write what I call this a lyric writer's melody. You know what I mean? It's a gibberish. So Julie Stein comes home about 10:30. I say, hey, Julie, listen to this. Saturday night is the loneliest night in the week. Because that's the night that my sweetie and I used to dance cheek to cheek. Now, Jimmy Van Heusen would say, hey, spare me that lyric writer's melody. I'll give you a melody. But Julie says, hey, I liked it. And he sat down on the piano and we wrote, I don't mind Sunday night at all, because that's the night friends come to call. And Friday to Sunday, Monday to Friday, go fast. And another week has passed, but Saturday night. And we finished the song in about roughly 3/4 of an hour. Now, in the same hotel lived a very, very famous Philadelphian called Manny Sachs, Emmanuel Sachs. As a matter of fact, there's a plaque of him on the wall at the original bookbinders. Manny Sachs, and he was the head of Columbia Records. And we went down to his apartment about 11:45, and there was a gin rummy game going with all the music publishers. And Julie Stein busted her and said, hey, you want to hear a song we just wrote? Saturday night is the loneliest night in the week. And a music publisher by the name of Joni Tapp said, I'll give you $25,000 for that song right now.
$25,000?
That's right. For that song right now. So we said, you got it. Right? And we went to bed feeling we had done a nice night's work, right? The next morning, the phone rang, California. Sam Frank. For 30 years, that's our greeting. Sam Frank. I call and I say, Frank Sam. He said, I heard you fellas wrote a song last night. I said, hey, not only did we write a song, did you hear what we got for you? He says, $25,000. He says, that song belongs to me. Now, Frank Sinatra sings better than Joni Tapp, the publisher. It didn't matter to us, you know, because the $25,000 isn't advanced against your royalties in any event. You follow? So Sinatra bought and music published that song, and you know what a hit that was.
How much did that really make?
Oh, more than $4, I promise you.
more than you'll count for us.
Yeah.
Do you ever write dummy lyrics? It sounds like it's not necessary for you because you get the lyric as soon as you hear the song.
No, dummy lyrics? Oh, I'll tell you, would you like to hear a story of a dummy lyric? It turned out to be a dummy lyric, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
We were doing a show called High Button Shoes, Julie Stein and I. And in the show, the young ingenue, the young leading girl, has to make a choice between the football hero and Phil Silvers, the con man. And we were trying to come up with an idea for a song for her to sing, and I came to Julie Stein when I said, I think I've got a notion for the song the young girl should sing. I'm betwixt and between, have to make my mind up which way to lean. Shall I stop, shall I go? Is it to, is it fro? I simply must make my mind up. I'm between and betwixt, running in a race, I feel that it's fixed. Yeah? So Julie said, let me work on that. He came back 2 days later and he played me this melody. Da 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 da. You know what that is. I'm betwixt and between. Got to make my mind up which I'm not making a joke. So now we take this tune to Jerome Robbins, a famous choreographer. He says, are you guys crazy? That's a modern Broadway show song. You can't put that in a high button shoes. And he threw it out. Now, when Julie Stein is doing Gypsy, he says, you know what would be a good tune here? That tune you wrote for High Button Shoes, which became Curtain Up, Light the Lights.
Did you ever get to use your betwixt and between anywhere?
No, I only use it on stories like this.
Are there any other like lines or lyrics that you wrote that you thought were like terribly clever, but
one line
that was too clever, couldn't work?
No, one other time it happened to me. One of the great, great stanzas is La Vie en Rose. Dee-da-dee-da-da-da-dee. Well, a fellow by the name of Mac David, brother of Hal David, wrote, you're too dangerous, Cherie, too dangerous for me. That's what he wrote. And it was a flop. So the publisher came to me and said, would you take a crack at that lyric? I said, yeah, I'd love to, because I said, first of all, it should be called La Vie en Rose. It shouldn't be called whatever he changed it to. So I wrote a lyric, and the end of the song went, I only know for as long as I live. I'll only live for the kiss that you give me, for that kiss you give to me makes all the world I see La Vie en Rose. That was the ending. And they loved it. But Mac David wouldn't relinquish the rights, so I never used that. But I took the line, because you're mine, the brightest star I see looks down my love and envies me because you're mine. I only know for as long as I may live, I'll only live for the kiss that you alone may give me. And when we kiss, that isn't thunder, dear. Now, see, that's good lyric writing. See, when you say thunder, you gotta say thunder, right? And when we kiss, that isn't thunder, dear. It's only my poor heart you hear. And it's applause because you're mine.
Are there any words that you always try to avoid putting at the end of a line because you know there's no words that are going to rhyme with it?
No, not that. And the main thing, The only thing I avoid is a word that doesn't sing out of the mouth. That's lyric. It must sing to a note. Must sing out of the... I find, because I love so to perform, I test all the lyrics. If I bring you the lyric, you're going to sing it. There's no way it won't sing out of your mouth, because if it sings out of my mouth, it'll sing out of anybody's mouth.
Are there words that are impossible to rhyme?
Oh, there's only one word, so-called, orange. There's no pure rhyme. You know, there are impure rhymes. You know what an impure rhyme is?
Yeah, like forage or something.
Yeah, forage, yeah.
Forage.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who would write something like that.
No, but you see, like you say, mine and time is an impure rhyme. Mine and fine is pure. Rhyme and time is pure. You know?
Oh, okay.
But I never come into that. Words don't bother me. They don't fight me. And when I'm writing, my happiest moments is come when I'm in my north patio in my home in Beverly Hills. I sit out in the north patio at a typewriter, and the sun beating down on me. I'm usually in swimming trunks. I just sit there and type away. And the moment I come to a line which just even remotely bothers me, I'll stop. I'll get up, walk over to the tree, pick an orange, walk over and look at a shutter, or walk over and look at a plant, and come back and start to type, like, no problem.
I want to mention three of the composers who you worked closely with for extended periods time, Saul Chaplin, Julie Stein, and Jimmy Van Heusen.
Yes.
Did their differences in style have an effect on the kinds of lyrics that you wrote?
Well, you see, with Saul Chaplin, the words and music came almost simultaneously. I'd run and say, hey, you like this for an idea for a song? Listen, this is my first affair, so please be. He'd say, no, this is my first affair, so please. That's good. We'd write. Julie Stein, the tunes came first. He would play me a complete tune, like dee da 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 dee da da da. He'd play da 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 dee da 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 dee da da da. You know, and with Jimmy Van Heusen again, the words and music came almost together. We had to write a song called "The Tender Trap." So I go to the typewriter. Since I have the title, I go. You see a pair of laughing eyes, and suddenly you're sighing sighs. You think nothing's wrong. You string along, boy, then snap. You're in the tender trap. That was my original way of writing it. But there's a rhythm in typing that I've developed when I say, you see a pair of laughing eyes, and suddenly you're sighing sighs. You're thinking nothing's wrong. You string along, boy, then snap. Those eyes, those sighs, they're part of the tender trap. And he wrote one of the worst melodies you ever heard. And I didn't know what to do. It was almost the first song we were writing. And I came back the next day, and he said, you know, that tune last night wasn't very good. I said, wasn't very good. That was the worst. He said, listen to the way it goes today. And he played the tune you now know. But writing songs for me is sheer joy. If a fellow goes to the piano and plays what I say prettily, professionally, and properly, I could write 10, 15 songs a day.
Well, are there people who you know you couldn't work with?
Well, no. I've had one of my great, great disappointments is I did once go with Harry Warren, the great, greatest composer of the world. Harry Warren, you know his medley? That's just to die from his medley, Harry Warren. From 42nd Street to Lullaby of Broadway to I Only Have Eyes for You to You Must Have Been a Beautiful Baby, Action the Peak of Santa Fe. I can go on for an hour. And we did one score, and nothing came of it. Another genius I worked with, and I don't use the word genius lightly, is Vernon Duke. The Vernon Duke of April in Paris, the Vernon Duke of I Can't Get Started With You, April, Autumn in New York, one of the geniuses. And we did a score. And I didn't completely strike out because we got a good standard. You ever hear a song called I Don't Want Me a Rich Young Mechanic? Not as long as there's a millionaire named Max. 'Cause good little girls go to heaven, but smart little girls go to Bergdorf's, to Bonwitz, to Magnus, to Bonwitz and Saks. You know that song?
No, I never heard that.
It's a popular song. A lot of people sing it. So I did get a song with Vernon Duke. I've almost written a hit song with everybody I've ever written with.
What do you think some of the most dramatic changes are in the music business and the nature of songs and song publishing?
I will tell you. I think song publishing is something I don't quite understand. There's no publishing for me now at all, I don't think. But I have high regard for the word imagery that is in the popular songs. I'm talking about songs you can discuss. I'm not talking about the noise. I'm talking about what I call the M&Ms, songs with music and meaning. I think what the Beatles have made an incredible contribution. The one song, ba da da dee dee da dee dee da da dee da 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 da. That's incredible music. Jimmy Webb, I think, is a genius, Jimmy Webb. I think his MacArthur Park. Have you ever heard the Boston Pops do MacArthur Park?
No, I haven't.
I think it's a work equal to the Rhapsody in Blue. I think it's incredible music.
I've always thought of that song as having a very static melody.
No, you just listen. It's got incredible music, MacArthur Park. My only quarrel with the young people today is that they don't have regard for titles. One of my most important titles is The Second Time Around. Now, I wouldn't write a song called Stardust. I wouldn't write a song called Chicago. I wrote a song called My Kind of Town.
Well, why My Kind of Town and not Chicago?
Because there is a song called Chicago, a very popular stand-in. Now, young Steve Schwartz, a man who did Godspell, very talented young man, why would he write Day by Day?
I understand what you're saying. Right.
And see what happens. You see, you vitiate the title. They're monitoring devices who monitor all music. So they're hearing a song called Day by Day. Whose Day by Day are they putting down? His or mine? Is he getting paid for mine? Am I getting paid for his?
So, I thought it was illegal to use a title that's already been used.
Cannot,
though I've noticed that that's been transgressed.
You cannot copyright a title.
Oh, I see.
You don't copyright a title. You copyright a song, the content of a song, the music of the song. But you cannot copyright a title.
You can
go out tomorrow and write, I've grown accustomed to a face. You really can. I've grown accustomed to a face. I see it around the place, at second or third base. It's a face I chase. I've grown accustomed to that face. Right? He can't say you stole, I've grown accustomed to a face. She almost makes it's a different song.
Well, if my version of I've Grown Accustomed to Your Face and the original were played on the radio, someone's supposed to be keeping a tally of what gets played.
The American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers.
Is that efficient?
Oh, yes. They have people. I mean, they can't listen to every station, but they will cross-section. They get a good sampling.
There's a saying that when you walk out of a show, if the people are singing the song and they walk out, you know you've got a hit. What do you think? Is that true or is that irrelevant?
It's absolutely true. I'll tell you another thing. When I came around, you didn't do a show until you had the Money Song. It was called the Money Song. You are da 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 dee da. People watch. What if? Sings out of the pit. You wouldn't start a show. Love, da 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 dee dee da 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 da. You had the Money Song. On a clear day, da 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 dee da. They had about 8 Money Songs in Annie Get Your Gun. There's a score for you. I won't even start to discuss Fair Lady. I was there opening that. Every song's a hit.
Is Broadway much different as far as you're concerned than it was years ago?
It's really returning to where it was, because there's no substitute for words and music. And a very famous young composer did a score. It's a tremendous hit, and I won't mention his name. And there wasn't anything you could sing. So he gave out an interview, and he said, I'm sick and tired of people telling me there's nothing to sing in my show. I don't want the people humming my songs. And I said, tell them not to worry.
I I get that. I think I know who you're talking about.
I don't want to mention his initials.
Okay. There was a time when hit songs weren't coming much from Broadway, say late 60s,
yeah,
early 70s.
They stopped writing songs.
Yeah, what happened there? What's your...
Composers stopped composing. Composers stopped composing is all I can tell you. Don't ask me why.
Okay, I won't.
Because I have no answer. I just say they stopped composing.
Do you think that's changed?
Oh, yes. I think you're going to come out of theaters hearing some songs. At least in my show.
We're out of time. It's been
You're
so
kidding.
Much fun to talk with
I've
you.
I've only been here an hour.
That's right.
No, but we must do it again.
Oh, I'd love to. Anytime you have the
friend,
time to come
friend,
back.
You see that gentleman there with the beautiful, warm, beautiful smile? That's Leonard Tesla, Mr. Philadelphia for me. Leonard Tesla will get in touch with you when I'm coming back, and I promise you I'll be back again because I love sitting opposite you.
Oh, I'd love to have you back. It was so much fun.
And tell him that I'm famous for being the father of Steve Kahn, K-H-A-N, one of the top three jazz guitarists in the world.
Okay, well, you told us. Okay.
Terry,
thanks so much
thank
for being
you.
Here. I hope your show is terrific on Sunday.
Oh,
I'm sure
terrific.
It will be.
Don't hope.
Okay.
I hope.
That's Sunday, May 18th, and that's not this Sunday. It's the week afterwards,
following.
This following Sunday. And that, by the way, is a benefit, and I'm just going to...
For the Solomon Schechter Schools.
The Solomon Schechter School, and I'm going to give you all the information about this. This is 8 o'clock at the Academy of Music, May 18th. That's a Sunday. And it's a benefit for the Solomon Schechter Day School. Any information you want about tickets, etc., can be gotten from 649-6310. Again, that's 649-6310. My very special guest today has been Sammy Kahn, the lyricist. And thanks again for being here.
Thank you,
wonderful.
Dear Terry.
That's it for this afternoon's Fresh Air. Tomorrow afternoon between 3 and about 4, a little bit afterwards, we'll be carrying President Carter's town meeting, and this will be held at Temple University. It's the town meeting that was initially scheduled for the fall and was postponed after the hostages were taken in Iran. So we will be broadcasting this town meeting live beginning at 3 o'clock. Also tomorrow at 2 o'clock, we'll be joined by Sandman Sims, who's a tap dancer. There's a film that's been made about him called No Maps on My Taps. And he's going to... Do you want to say something about him?
Yeah, Sandman is going to be part of the hour.
Oh, great.
Bojangles. He's like... I think he's a consultant or something.
Oh, great. Well, he's going to be
marvelous.
Performing at the TLA.
He's marvelous.
So that's all coming up to tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air. I hope you can join us then. Contributing to the... one more thing about tomorrow. Bill Van Wert is going to review... a new film called Where the Buffalo Roam. So that's all. That will be after the town meeting, about 4:15-ish, okay? Contributing to this afternoon's Fresh Air was Francis Davis. Our technical director today was Scott Williams. The associate producer of Fresh Air is Danny Miller. And I'm Terry Gross. Thanks for listening. Have a good evening. This is WUHY-FM in Philadelphia, listener-supported public radio.
Good evening. From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Susan Stamberg.
And I'm Sanford Unger, with All Things Considered.
Same time that we wish this part of Canada, this province, to become a sovereign state, we clearly wanted to be associated economically with the rest of Canada.
Quebec and Ontario dominate, and for that reason, I believe there's only one alternative, and that's independence for all of Western Canada.
Later this month, voters in Quebec will decide whether...